How many of you recall the story, at least somewhat from our childhood, of the Velveteen Rabbit? Do you know what I'm talking about? Kid's story, sort of, although very grown up. I really like that story myself. Sounds on me that I should tell it to my kid. I really like the story myself, and I may have heard it as a child. I don't know if you did or not, but I certainly don't remember hearing it as a kid. That's part of the whole sermon, is that my memory's not always great, actually. There are times I really intend to do something, and then it slips my mind. I was talking during coffee hour, and someone said, well, I don't want to bug you. And I was like, no, please, remind me, because I need that. So sometimes these memories slip past us. And in many ways, when we can come to recognize that within ourselves, whatever it is our strengths are, our weaknesses, that's a crucial lesson. So the first time I actually remember really hearing the Velveteen Rabbit was in a worship experience. It was with others in a program that I likened this morning earlier to sort of ministry boot camp. It was a summer where we were really in a pressure cooker of emotions, looking at our own lives and experiences, our backgrounds, as well as how to do social justice, how to become public theologians at the age of 15 and 16 and 17. Tough, heady work, but good work. As you might not know, let me read the story first. The Velveteen Rabbit, this is how it goes, at least in part. "What is real?" asked the rabbit one day when they were lying side by side near the nursery fender before Nana came to tidy the room. "What is real? Does it mean having things that buzz inside you and a stick-out handle?" "Real isn't how you're made," said the skin horse. "It's a thing that happens to you. When a child loves you for a long, long time, not just to play with, but really loves you, then you become real." "Does it hurt?" asked the rabbit. "Yeah, sometimes," said the skin horse, for he was always truthful. "When you are real, though, it doesn't matter as much to be hurt." "Does it happen all at once, like being wound up?" he asked, "or bit by bit?" "It doesn't happen all at once. You become. It takes a long time. And that's why it doesn't happen often to people or things who break easily or who have sharp edges or who have to be carefully kept. Generally, by the time you are real, most of your hair has been loved off, and your eyes drop out, and you get all loose in the joints and are very shabby. But these things don't matter at all, because once you are real, you can't be ugly except to people who don't understand what it means to be real." I remember hearing that story, not necessarily as a child, and thinking somewhat in the world of imagination and animals, but in a worship experience where someone was suggesting that each of us get in touch with whatever it was that pulled at us, that wore us down, that made us real. The times that we were hurt, but also loved, is part of what brought us to life. And looking back, I referred to this program as ministry boot camp. That's certainly not how they sold it. And most of the people who went there didn't become ministers. But what is almost universally true is that most ministers, like most people, are inherently broken. They've been made real by the world. They can't break easily or have sharp edges, nor really can they be carefully kept all that often. And that's why looking back and figuring out how life has made us real could be useful. It gets back in part to those elements of strengths and weaknesses. Truly ministering, whether it's from a professional or from a congregant, is a sense of making sense of the world, of our story, of our community, and the world around us. This is in part why I wanted to look at tolerance versus acceptance in our own lives, how we tolerate certain things about ourselves and also accept them, grow to hopefully, how we do that in one another, and then how we do it in the world around us. Now, many of us were taught at some point in life that tolerance was exactly what was needed, right? Like tolerance was the thing to achieve for, particularly when it came to issues of culture, different people, different experiences. That was the good thing. That was the thing we could expect. And in some ways, it still is. But tolerance can also be limited. It can be a way of not really seeing the depths of whatever it is we're looking at, whether it's ourself or someone else. Peggy Levitt writes, tolerance is living side by side, sort of separate but equal. Not quite acceptance, definitely not engagement. Pluralism means willing to be changed and change. It means a level of listening and interaction. Isn't that the life that I think we're called to, a life of engaging the world more fully? Not just what we expect the world should be, not just our lives, not just one another, but something real and lasting. Finding love in that place is miraculous. It can be fleeting, though. During that same program, the summer that I spent in Atlanta, I read this story. It was from Nancy Eisland, who was a premier disabled theologian. She tells the story of someone who I often remembered in my mind's eye, it being her, but it was someone else, who had a disability. And over time, had made some peace with it, had gotten to be okay with that, had embraced that part of their identity and shared it with the world. But then there were some days, whether it was late at night, in bed with a partner, or first thing in the morning, the person was worried about how the world would accept it or how she would make it through. The story actually is from Alice Walker. Nancy Eisland is retelling it. Alice Walker had been photographed for a magazine. She was telling her husband, "I'm not really sure I like it because my teeth are kind of crooked. And what if they catch my lazy eye?" Alice's partner says, "I thought you made peace with that." And Alice said, "I did." And the truth is for each of us that we make peace with things and it escapes us at different times in our life. These expectations that we first have placed on us and then grow to take on ourselves over life can be difficult, and so it shifts from time to time. Our different beliefs about religion and the world can help us or harm us. Some of us believe so strongly that there is one truth that we often end up harming ourselves trying to align to whatever that is. If tolerance does that to you, it's probably harmful. In finding acceptance, perhaps there's a way to let go of some of that expectation, some of that hard piece of what ought to be and should be, and accepting us for who we are. Obviously, that's a fairly clear Buddhist lesson. In Buddhism, letting go is one of the high standards that people can find in deepening one's spirituality. Thupten Children writes, it can be difficult to accept others and, frankly, to accept ourselves. How many of us have thought, I should be better? I should be doing something different or something more. I should have more. Children goes on to write, all of this is conception. It's all mental fabrication. The mind's just turning up shoulds and ought tos and supposed tos. And yet we believe it. Part of the solution is to recognize that these thoughts are really rubbish and not reality. When we stop believing them, it becomes much easier to accept what we are in any given moment, knowing that we will change in the next. I often find myself drawn to the line that no river flows quite in the same way. All rivers, you never step into the same stream twice. All life is changing. We are growing ever so much with one another. It's a process of what it's like to be alive. Aging, which can be difficult for many of us, is something that people can do well or poorly, just like personal growth. Sarah Moore Campbell, a UU minister, writes about this. She writes that aging is a lifelong process to which we are all bound. The people who age the best are those who, as the famous prayer puts it, have the serenity to accept things that they can't change, courage to change what they can, and wisdom to know the difference. She says, I admire people who age well more than those who remain youthful. Sometimes it's hard to tell the difference, for both may appear vital and alert, but one avoids the realities of the autumn season of life by pretending it's still summer, while the other embraces the beautiful colors of the leaves around. What an image for this time of year, and for our own lives, the blending of beautiful colors, leaves that have fallen from trees because they have been changed by time and their experience. Isn't this true for all of us in some way? We're all different. All of us having grown and been loved and made real in different ways, very difficult ways at times, but each of us unique. Henri Nouwen writes about this, that we must acknowledge our limitations but claim our unique gifts and live as equal among equals. One of the difficulties with tolerance versus acceptance is that sometimes we can think of differences as having power over things, right? And so we wonder if my theology and religion is better than yours, or my way of cooking or eating or being in relationship, my job, my house, my culture, when we can accept what is. Just what is. No more and no less, then we can let go of some of that comparison, some of that need to rank against the other, and we can just be enjoying life for whatever it is we need to find. Howard Thurman writes that we need to look within our hearts to see whatever it is truly deep within us. This may not be true for everyone, that there are deep things down there. Some of us have lives that go mostly smoothly, and some people have lives of struggle where they've had to make peace with things. For Alice Walker, for Nancy Island, for others, it's about the body, making peace with however it was that they were born or became disabled and live with that. For others, it's about age or education or money. One of the ways that I have had to make peace, we're often informed when we become ministers of that role of making peace and looking at our brokenness. One of the ways I made peace in my life started really early in childhood. Going to church a lot, I really believed in a sort of proactive God, a personal God who could control things, and so I would pray because the person I was wasn't the person I wanted to be or thought I should be or expected to be, and so I prayed diligently, often multiple times a day. And I thought that there would be a powerful thing that could change anything and therefore change me, right? I don't know if any of you know that prayer. For me, that prayer was about identity. When I was in high school, actually at this ministry camp, I worked with people and I got to know people. We would talk about social justice in the world. We would talk about issues of racism and sexism and ableism and issues around sexual identity and sexual orientation. And in that moment, I started to wrestle with, I felt like maybe I'm attracted to men and women, but I think that's wrong. I struggled with being able to find my story. I think back to Iolo Achilles' opening words, and we'll go back to them, but it was because one other person shared his story that I could search for my own. Trey Hall, one of my close friends and mentors now, piped up. Each night, the guys who were on the same floor would stay in one mentor's room. You would not imagine how dirty and smelly this room was. For whatever reason, the mentor graciously allowed us to eat peanuts and just trash the room. We didn't have to clean up. We didn't have to throw the shells in a trash can or anything. We could just sit around and really just talk. And sometimes the conversation was superficial, and sometimes there was deep honesty. I will admit a deep sin, actually, to you all, because I never felt good doing this, and I told Trey that. In my own questioning and wondering about identity, I kind of pushed a question to the group about whether one could be religious and gay or lesbian or bisexual. Because I thought Trey might be gay. and I wanted some help. Probably wasn't fair of me. I often felt bad about that. But Trey went there, and he said to the group, "You should know this about me." That started a process over months of talking with him and wrestling with identity and looking, as Howard Thurman said, deep within the heart to figure out who I am. Now, each of us have these identities in various ways. Whether we're a child and we wonder about our identity to the parent, whether we're a partner or we work or we're a student, we each wonder who we are and who we will be in the future. The question is, how do we stop long enough to look and listen? Thurman, in this piece that I'm about to read, talks about God knowing the heart. Your mileage may vary with that phrase. I'm not so sure about that, but that's what Thurman writes. Perhaps you think that too. Perhaps you think that the heart is just known by love. But that's what he writes. He says this: "Often we're reminded that the heart has secrets which it doesn't share, not even with itself. This is true because in each of us are longings and desires that find their way out. The secrets of the heart are the raw material of the genuine spirit of the individual, the stuff of the spirit that dwells deep within each of us. They are the holy. When we pray, it's the word that is spoken, the thought that is clearly defined, the desire that is actively felt, and more. The more is the very essence of the life's deep intent. It is the crucial units of shapeless meaning that give to each life its quality and its flavor. God knows the heart's secrets. Where there is fear and anxiety, those may take over. In order for the deepest things in us to be touched and kindled, both fear and anxiety must be wiped away." He ends by saying, "This we can do for ourselves sometimes, but not always. The one thing that fear and anxiety cannot abide is conscious exposure to the love of the holy." Fear and anxiety, when met with the love of the holy, grace is another word for it, radical acceptance. All of these are ideas of how we can be with ourselves and one another in making peace. It's true that there will be times that we will let go of what we think we ought to be. Times we'll feel shamed, we will fall short of who we want to be, and that's okay. In many ways, that helps us and the rest of the world grow. Part of the problem in our lives is that we can too often go far to one extreme or the other. Often we cast ourselves as either the hero or the villain without recognizing that we are both one and the same. So the question is, how do we live in such a complex body? How do we live in a world in which we are both active participants, but also people who have things done to them? We are both children and children of a system. We help to create this world, but we are also shaped by this world, by forces far outside of us. If you can find that piece of grace, that radical acceptance, that letting go of expectations and embracing of whoever we are at our core, always hoping to be your best self, that's a powerful spot. Our shared faith calls us to do so much of this. It calls us to know that our life shall never be flawless, called to accept that brokenness and strive for healing. Our beauty comes not from walking through life unscathed, but from the way the leaves turn over time, from the scars that heal through a life well-lived, and from making peace with ourselves and one another. By doing more than simply tolerating ourselves, our flaws and our foibles, our mistakes and our missteps, we grant ourselves and one another grace. That's a powerful thing. So often, in our faith, we think about this issue of who we are and how we treat one another well. And we might think about our first principle. Some of you know that, right? We talk about it often. I don't have a great memory, so that's the one I remember mostly. We also have a great acronym for it, which is IWOD. IWOD, inherent worth and dignity. That's the way that we often think of, why are we nice to people? From birth, we are due the same amount of value and humanity, but that's not the only place that grounds us in this. Our seventh UU principle, the very last one, reminds us that we are to respect the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Often, when that principle is spoken in worship or in small groups and RE classes for adults or children, we use it to talk about the world out there, someone else, how we're called to take care of it or them, which in some way is true, but we miss the fine print. Just like the commandment to love our neighbors as ourselves, this religious principle, respecting that interdependent web of life, holds us accountable for treating ourselves well. If we do that, if we truly respect that web of life of which we are a part, then we will find a way to do more than simply tolerate our lives. The pieces and parts of us, both that we like and appreciate and that we wish were better and that we wish were never there. We will, in fact, learn to accept and embrace them and share them. We are all connected in ways great and small, and how we choose to think and talk about ourselves affects those around us more than we can tell. During coffee hour, someone pointed out that one of the key Weight Watchers phrases is, if we talked about our friends the way we talked about ourselves, we wouldn't have friends at all. Just yesterday, I think it was, or earlier this week, another person, one of our members on Facebook, posted this great image, this quote, "Be careful how you are talking to yourself, because you are listening." That's by Lisa Hayes. So take a moment to think about your life and the way that you have grown to be who you are, to give thanks for those ways in which you have been made real, whether they pulled at you and broke you or made you whole. I go back to these words from Iolo Achille. Remember, oppression thrives off isolation. Connection is the only thing that can save us. Remember, oppression thrives on superficiality. Honesty about our struggles is the key to our liberation. Remember, your story can help save someone else's life. Your silence contributes to someone else's struggle. Speak so that all may be free. Love so all can be liberated. The moment is now. We need you. Amen, and blessed be.